Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Divorce Girl Smiling Podcast. My name is Jackie Pilisoff, and I'm your host. I'm the creator and editor-in-chief of Divorce Girl Smiling, the website, the podcast, and the mobile app. If you're listening to this and you are going through a divorce, or you just got divorced, or even if you're thinking about divorce, you probably are listening to this because the word money is in the title of this podcast, and money is a huge stressor, if not, might be the biggest stressor when it comes to a divorce. And if you're worried about money, today I want to offer you some great tips that are going to make you feel so much better if you're facing divorce. Well, I'm actually not going to offer the tips. My expert is going to offer the tips. I want to introduce her. She's a great guest to have for this. Her name is Tracy Conan. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Jackie. Thank you for having me again.
Well, I love having you on my podcast because you're extremely experienced, you're smart, and I think money, do you agree with me that money is one of the biggest concerns people have before, during, and after divorce?
I think people have kids as their biggest concern and money for sure as the second concern, and rightfully so, because first of all, divorce is expensive by itself, but second of all, when you're splitting up the assets, splitting up the paychecks, trying to get support payments, it's certainly very, very stressful. So I am here in this divorce space to help give people actionable advice that will help them navigate some of these issues.
Before we get into what we're going to talk about today, I want to tell the listeners a little bit about you, Tracy. Tracy's a CPA and she's a forensic accountant. And Tracy, you've been doing this for 25 years, right?
I sure have.
All right. So you've worked with a lot of divorce couples. And one thing people might not know that are listening is in some divorce cases, one or both parties hires a forensic accountant to figure out what the other person has financially. Is that true?
It is true. I get hired to help them sort out the finances. What do they have? How much is everyone making? How much is it going to cost to live going forward? So how do we, you know, who pays who support and things like that? But also, in some of the cases, I'm hired because I'm doing a fraud investigation, because someone is suspicious that there might be hidden money, that there might be money spent inappropriately on things like affair partners, drugs, gambling, or buying real estate that someone didn't know about. All of those kinds of things might come under that fraud investigation that I can do.
Okay, amazing. Today, I want to talk about people who are newly divorced. So Tracy and I did a podcast a few weeks ago about going through a divorce and tips to finding money that your spouse might be hiding. And you can find that, by the way, if you go to the Divorce Girl Smiling podcast, you'll see it's still available to listen to. But today we're going to talk about after the divorce, specifically money management tips for after the divorce. Speaking from experience, when you get divorced and the process is over and your divorce is final, it's a big, big relief in many ways. That said, it is still stressful, I think, when it comes to money, because you basically are left with having to pay bills maybe with less money, or instead of splitting things when you were living with two people, it's now going to be one. Plus, maybe you're still paying off your attorney and some other bills. And then I believe that after you get divorced, you should redo your will. So that's like a couple thousand more. So there's definitely expenses and stress in your post-divorce money life. And that's what I want to talk about today, because Tracy is going to offer great money management tips for after the divorce. And Tracy, I love how you say I want you to be on solid financial footing as you come out of this divorce. I love that. So tell me what you mean by that.
Well, as I was working with people going through that process of divorce, you know, I noticed the things that you've already talked about, all the financial stress that comes once you are done with the process. And there are so many legal and financial things that you need to think about even after the divorce is final, because you want to protect yourself. You want to make sure that your ex can't meddle in your finances anymore. You want to make sure that you are able to pay your bills. And so I decided that I wanted to help provide information to people coming out of that divorce process so that they could feel more confident about where they stand financially, and that they could have some actionable things, actionable tips that they could apply to their lives to start, you know, little by little, feeling like they're on better financial footing.
All right. So I love this. What you're doing is a great thing for newly divorced people. So Tracy has just come out with a program called the Post-Divorce Money Guide. It's 10 steps to managing your financial situation after your divorce. And what this podcast is about is we're going to give you some tips that are included in it. But what Tracy has created is, tell me if I'm right, Tracy, a workbook where people can put in numbers and figure this out themselves so that they have information to budget and live a financial life that's within their means.
There are worksheets to it that they can use that help with things like budgeting, but there are some checklists, all sorts of things that you need to think about doing after the divorce is final. So one example would be, go look at your life insurance policies and make sure you change the beneficiary, because most people who are married have their spouse as the beneficiary. Well, if you're divorced now and you pass away, you probably don't want your ex-husband or ex-wife getting that life insurance money. So it's all sorts of things like that on this list of, gosh, about 30 things that you need to think about doing. And I walk people through some of the issues, the documents you might need, how you're going to get them, and my best recommendations for carrying some of these things out.
I love this so much. And I wish it would have been around when I got divorced, because Tracy, I basically walked out of the courthouse when I got divorced 15 years ago. And I felt like, oh, it's over. And then I just forgot about everything. And there was this whole checklist of things that I was supposed to do and my ex was supposed to do. None of the attorneys followed up. Nobody did anything. And then there were problems created down the road. I wish I would have had this tool, because how long do you think it takes to do it?
Oh, I think it'll take you maybe an hour or two to go through it and have all the information that you need.
See, isn't that amazing? And then I could have taken care of all these things and avoided a lot of issues that came up post-divorce. So if you're listening to this, couple hours of your time, checklist, not an expensive tool, and a great way to manage your money and have your best financial life after divorce. So with that said, I want to start and talk about 8 money management tips for after the divorce. You're listening to the Divorce Girl Smiling podcast with Jackie Pilisoff and my guest, Tracy Conan, CPA, forensic accountant, and the creator of Divorce Money Guide and Post-Divorce Money Guide. So Tracy, I'm just going to list these tips that you gave me, and then you can explain each one.
Absolutely.
All right. So the first one is figure out what you have. Now that your divorce is wrapped up, figure out what you have. That's the first tip. What does that mean?
I want people to put together a list of all the accounts that they have. That's bank accounts, credit card accounts, investment accounts, retirement accounts. I want to make sure that they know exactly where they're starting from when they are done with this divorce. Now, it's probably pretty easy because they probably put together lists like this during their divorce, or they have some documents from their divorce filing that have lists of accounts. So it shouldn't be too hard to do it, but it's a great way to sort of get yourself grounded and know exactly where you stand financially with your accounts.
So when you say put a list together, do you mean just write it down, handwrite it, or on a computer, and then just keep the page in a document?
Yes. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about in the post-divorce money guide is going through all of these accounts and making sure that your spouse's name is no longer on them and some things like that. So it's a great tool that you can refer back to for various different things as you're managing your own finances.
And how about this? Also, maybe you haven't talked to the person who's managing that account since your divorce was final, or even since you got divorced. So maybe you want to check in with these people who are managing these accounts. Maybe you want to switch to someone else. Maybe one of the people is your ex-husband's college friend and you don't really want to work with him anymore because you don't feel comfortable. So you might want to make decisions based on going through a list and looking at these accounts and making sure they're all where you want them.
I agree with that. I also think that when you're putting together the list, sometimes it jogs people's memories about something. There was an account somewhere that they sort of forgot about, and now they think, oh, I could close that account and put the money in my main account or something like that.
Simplify things, clean everything
yes.
up. Love it.
Yes.
Number two, live in housing that you can afford.
This one is so important. When people are getting divorced, there is often a feeling that they want to stay in the family home, especially for moms. I think it's, you know, they talk about not wanting to uproot the kids and keeping the kids somewhere familiar. And I think it's fantastic that they're thinking through all those issues. But one of the things that often comes up is whether or not that's affordable for them. You know, oftentimes it's a big house that comes with a number of expenses. And I hate to see people living in housing that is going to make their budget really, really tight every month. And so as much as I appreciate the sentiment of wanting to stay in that family home, I think it's something that people have to think about very, very carefully and get real about whether or not it's affordable to them. Because living somewhere that is more budget friendly will give them more options in the rest of their life and give them some breathing room.
So you're talking about the person who was awarded the home in the divorce, and maybe now they're thinking, well, I'm glad I got the home. That's great. But the mortgage is $3,000 a month, and there's a beautiful rental property that I could have. What would happen if I was paying $2,000 a month or something like that?
That's right. That's an option. And I also recognize that some people might be looking at these tips before their divorce is final. So maybe they're in a position where they're still negotiating what to do with the house. And maybe it's a situation where you and your spouse can decide, hey, we're just going to sell the house and split the profits from it and go find something each on our own.
Okay, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I do think there are people listening to this who are going through a divorce and wanting to know what's ahead. And I would 100% agree. And I tell people, from what I've learned by being in this business for so long, wish I would have known it when I was getting divorced, is if you want to find out if you're living in a house that you can afford, the first call that you should make is to a mortgage banker. And by the way, I want to give a shout out to Tammy Wolenzak, who is a wonderful mortgage banker who specializes in helping people with divorce. And Tammy Wolenzak, it's tammywolenzak.com, or you can find her on Divorce Girl Smiling. But my point is that if you talk to a mortgage banker, they will do all your financials. They'll put together numbers for you and tell you what your mortgage is going to be at a certain interest rate. And then you can look and say, is that something I want to take on? Or
right.
do I maybe you'll find out, oh my gosh, that's so much better than I thought. This is great. I'm for sure going to stay in my house. Or maybe you'll say, you know, I might be able to do so much more. Travel, take the kids places, do more with the kids. Maybe your child is in a private school or something. And maybe you're going to feel much more relieved if you change your housing situation. So the whole point of this is to be empowered and get information so you can make the best decisions, not just kind of guess.
I totally agree. And that's where Tammy is so fantastic about this, is because she will look at the different options that are available. She will figure out how much they will each cost. She'll help you decide if it's budget busting or not. You know, she's going to give you her best professional opinion on the affordability of the options and what might work best.
Yeah, love it. It's so good to be empowered and really have that information. Okay, we're moving on to number 3 of 8 money management tips for after the divorce. Number 3, close credit accounts that you and your spouse shared.
Well, and that's going to tie in really well with number 4, so I want to talk about them both together, because number 4 is monitor your credit.
Right.
It is really, really important coming out of that divorce to be careful about your credit. You and your spouse had credit cards or loans together, and you want to make sure that your name is off those accounts so that you're not held legally responsible for them. Your creditors, the credit card company does not care what your divorce agreement says. Until your name comes off that account, you are responsible for paying it. And so that gets to be a really hard issue with some people, and they say, well, my husband agreed to keep paying that debt after we got divorced, and then he stopped. Why are they coming after me? Well, it's because your name is still on it. So your name needs to come off that account. But the even safer move is to actually close those credit cards that had both of your names on them, so there's no risk that there could ever be anything else on that account with your name tied to it, and then get new credit cards that are in your name only. And then keep an eye, I said, we're gonna cover number 4, monitoring your credit. Keep an eye on your credit to make sure that no debts pop up that you weren't aware of, because you might forget an account and your name was still on it. And we just wanna be aware of that.
All right, Tracy, I have a question that I've always kind of wondered about and do not know the answer. What are the benefits of having good credit? Or I guess a better way to ask this question is, what happens if you don't have good credit? What are some of the bad things that will happen?
Well, certainly, if you don't have good credit and you need to get a loan for an auto, you are wanting to buy a house or refinance the house you're in, you're going to have a really hard time doing that. You'll have a harder time getting credit cards when you want to. And so, of course, you want to keep your credit intact for that. Now, when I say go and get new credit cards and close the old ones, sometimes that's easier said than done. So if you and your spouse have had some credit challenges, it might not be possible for you to open new credit cards. So you might have to keep those old cards and make sure his name is off the ones you're keeping, your name is off the ones he's keeping.
You're listening to the Divorce Girl Smiling podcast with Jackie Pilisoff and my guest, Tracy Conan, a CPA and a forensic accountant who is the creator of Divorce Money Guide and Post-Divorce Money Guide. And Tracy, before we move on to tip number 5 of 8 tips for money management after divorce, tell me how somebody can find the Divorce Money Guide and the Post-Divorce Money Guide.
It is so very simple. They can go to divorcemoneyguide.com, or they can go to postdivorcemoneyguide.com.
Or you can find Tracy and the Divorce Money Guide and Post-Divorce Money Guide on Divorce Girl Smiling as well. Moving on to number 5, start an emergency fund. This might be my favorite tip.
Emergency funds are so important, and I know if any of our listeners have been digging into budgeting, they might be tired of hearing about the emergency fund, but it's so important. It is that money that you have set aside for when something of an emergency nature comes up, that car repair you weren't expecting, your refrigerator craps out, you know, you have a roof leak, something like that. Someone goes to the emergency room and you have a big copay that you have to pay. That's what this emergency fund is for. And I know, as we talked about, a lot of people coming out of divorce are tight on money, right? Budgets are tight, and it probably seems like an emergency fund is something you could never find money for. But I always say it's important to start somewhere. Try $25 a week, something like that. See if you can't get that into a fund to start accumulating it. And then the real key is to leave that money alone unless you have a true emergency. It's tempting to want to borrow from that emergency fund, but letting it stay in that fund, because I'll tell you what, when your car breaks down and you have a $1,200 repair bill that you need to pay and you've got that money in that account because you've been accumulating it for a couple of years, you're going to feel so relieved.
I could not agree more, and I love that you said $25 per week. I was actually going to say $50 a month, and I am living proof that emergency funds work. And the reason is this is something I did do right. When I first got divorced, I used to take, it was a different amount every month, depending on what I felt like I wanted to give based on my expenses. And I'd give anywhere between like $25 and $100 a month. And I basically just put it in an account and let it go and forget about it. And literally looked at it 3 years later, and there was like a few thousand dollars in there. And I was so excited when I first looked at it. And I was like, wow, it just made me feel so much better. It gave me all this peace of mind. And you may never use it. And Tracy, I hope you don't get mad at me for saying this, but you could also use your emergency fund years later. Let's say your finances are way better and you want to take your kids on like a really nice vacation. You could use the money from there. Is that a no-no or?
Well, I mean, in the strictest sense, I suppose I should scold you, but you did give the disclaimer that would be happening at a point when you're finally, you do have the money on a monthly basis to cover an emergency that came up, so you wouldn't need to have the fund. I just think that, you know, even if, gosh, $25 a month, if you could start putting that into the account, that is a great place to start. And there are probably people who are listening who are saying, I literally am living paycheck to paycheck. I don't even have the $25 a month to set aside. I would encourage you to think about things you could do, like maybe you have a subscription to Netflix that you don't use that much, or maybe you stop for your fancy coffees a couple times a week and you could reduce that. I think we all have little areas that we might be able to reduce to find some money like that. I always say, look at your mobile phone bill. Is that plan that you're using, is that the one that you really need, or could you get a little bit lesser plan that would save you some money each month?
The phone bill, the cable bill,
all those subscription darn streaming services,
yeah,
that we use.
I mean, anything. And then, Tracy, I love this. Take the $10 a month that you just saved and put it into the emergency fund instead.
Or how about this? I just had a client say to me that they were going through some of their bank statements and found that they had been paying $15 a month for a subscription service for the last 2 years that they completely forgot that they had and they were never even using. So I got to think that lots of us have opportunities like that where we've got something that we forgot we were paying for. You signed up for the free 1 month trial and then never canceled it.
Absolutely. Well, that was tip number 7. Look for little places to cut back. Now, Tracy,
we're getting ahead of ourselves. I love it.
Well, you did put in here, you deserve to enjoy things, but you have to be realistic.
It's true. So coffee shops, going to the corner coffee shop and getting your fancy coffee that costs $5, $6, $7, $8, whatever it is an easy one to pick on because so many people do it. And I don't think that you need to deprive yourself of your fancy coffee. I just say you don't need to get it every day. So why not make yourself some coffee at home most days and then once or twice a week, treat yourself to that coffee shop. But it's ways like that that you can cut back and save money without feeling like you completely gave up everything fun. Because I'm a big fan of the fancy coffee and I love to have it. I just don't have it every day because I realize what it does to my budget.
And when you don't have it every day, you appreciate it so much more and you enjoy it more.
That's so true.
It's like going out for dinner. If you went out to a fancy restaurant every night for 2 weeks, you'd probably get sick of it. If you let yourself go out, let's say one night a week to a nice restaurant, you're going to really appreciate and look forward to that every week.
I totally agree.
All right, last one, number eight, celebrate your money successes. What does that mean?
When you have those wins, when you make some extra money at your job, or you do a great job saving money, shaving your budget somewhere, celebrate that. Reward yourself in some way. And rewarding yourself doesn't necessarily mean you have to go buy yourself a gift, but do something positive for yourself to acknowledge that you've done really well with your money, even if it's a little win.
I just love it because I think what Tracy and I are both trying to say is look at your money in a positive way. This whole conversation might have made you feel a little bit stressed, and that's what we do not want to do. We want you to feel really good about your money, and when you do get like a big commission check or you find money that you didn't expect, those are the wins. So try to think of money in like a more healthy way. Another tip is feel gratitude for what you have. Instead of stressing out about what you don't have, think to yourself, wow, this is great what I have. I've done really well. I work hard. I'm a great mom. I'm doing this all by myself, and I deserve it.
I totally agree. A lot of people going through divorce have shame around the subject of money, especially if they weren't the main breadwinner, if they weren't terribly involved with managing of the money, if they don't know a lot that has been going on. And it can make it really overwhelming to take control of your money. And so I think it's so important to, start taking steps little by little to being better with your money, and then, being really proud of yourself for making those steps.
I have two more things to say, and Tracy, tell me if you agree with me. One, no one should ever feel any guilt about any money they're getting from their spouse. It was either given to you through the court system or through mediation, so there is no reason to have any guilt whatsoever. And the second thing is, my dad used to say this to me, everybody feel stress about money, no matter how much or how little you have. So if you're listening to this and think, oh, there's people that have hundreds of thousands of dollars, they probably don't have to worry. Trust me, they're worried. It's just on a bigger scale. So everybody has stress with their money, and everybody should enjoy what they do have.
You're right. When you think about the money you're receiving as a result of your divorce, and we're talking, whether that's assets being split up and you're getting, half of an account or something like that, or whether it's spousal support or child support payments, that's not a gift to you from your spouse. That is something that you're entitled to by virtue of having been married and having made arrangements about the money and by going through the process of divorce. And so you're absolutely right. That's what's been awarded to you, and don't feel guilty about receiving that money. And yes, no matter how much money people make, they tend to feel stress about it and tend to worry that they might not have enough, or they might lose it, or anything like that.
100%. Tracy, you are so great to have on the show. Thank you so much for taking time to do this.
Well, it was fun to be with you again, and I thank you for having me on.
This is the Divorce Girl Smiling Podcast with my guest, Tracy Conan, a CPA and a forensic accountant who is the creator of Divorce Money Guide, which is a 10-step handbook for men and women getting divorced to help them determine if their spouse is hiding money. She's also the creator of the Post-Divorce Money Guide, which is a handbook in helping you manage your money after divorce. If you want to learn more about Tracy, go to divorcemoneyguide.com or postdivorcemoneyguide.com, or you can find her on Divorce Girl Smiling. And if you want to read more articles, listen to more podcasts, or find other great resources, go to divorcegirlsmiling.com. Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you real soon.